Everybody, welcome to another installment of Show to View with Mike G, the show of life, the show of the early days of coffee in Austin, Texas, the show of gelato, small town living, dropping out of college and the woodlands. Today's guest, this is an episode dedicated to coffee. I know sometimes we get preoccupied talking about booze and the hospitality industry, but coffee is just as remarkable, just as delicious. And today's guest, Mr. Patrick Pierce and Lorenzo Perkins, the proprietors of Fleet Coffee in Austin, Texas, just awarded the best coffee innovations by the Houston Chronicle for 2016. And I got to tell you, this is a great chat, really fun, really light, and you get to dive into the passion of coffee these two gentlemen have. And honestly, this kind of bromance that has formed at Cafe Medici in Clarksville and what it has turned into with the great Fleet Coffee in Weberville. So without further ado, I hope you guys enjoy this chat with Patrick Pierce and Lorenzo Perkins of Fleet Coffee.
Well, I mean, I think it's actually more dependent upon how much alcohol we're drinking while we close.
Yes.
Patrick's like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, we may or may not have a fridge full of beer and
other delightful
eight
things.
Bottles of spirits. Yeah, it's a little too much.
Is there? There's a drink that was circulating in the industry for a long time called the closer. Now, as you can imagine, it's also known as the ender in some circles. But what is? Do you guys have? If in fact, you know, hypothetically, if you actually drank closing, God forbid, you would do that because you're very sane business owners. Is there a particular drink when you go and you close the shop up? Something you really like to go to, you would like to go to, sorry, if you did drink.
If we did, in fact, partake.
That's right, yeah. If for God only knows why, but.
Yeah, I'd have to say I'm a shot in a beer kind of guy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Boilermaker, yeah? So that's the industry term for it?
You know, I'm always confused as to the Boilermaker because for some reason, in my mind, you're supposed to drop that shot into the beer.
Yeah.
Is that how that works?
I don't know that it's like that. Actually.
Okay, that's just what's in my head. So every time somebody says Boilermaker, I'm like, oh, you're getting fucked.
It's the guy that said sake bombs are a good idea, and then all of a sudden, ever after, it's just sinking some sake in some Budweiser.
Yeah, exactly.
But Patrick, is that not the case?
That sounds disgusting. I'm just thinking of an Irish car bomb.
Like, yeah, see, now that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
That's the whole, you know, you drop in something and another thing.
Yeah, Boilermaker is just the pair, the one-in-one.
I call it a Happy Meal.
That's good too. I've heard that.
Yeah.
I think that's what Mohawk calls it, Grackle. Like,
well, that's what our neighbors, because we're right next door to the Lost Well.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And so that's what they call it.
Oh, that's
so
good.
We'll just run over there and have a Happy Meal.
Is there any trading going on? This is one of the beloved things of the industry, trades. You guys have good coffee. They might have some good booze. That happens sometimes?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One of the perks, yeah?
Absolutely.
I mean, well, with yeah. pretty much everybody on the block, though.
Gourmands, Dog and Duck, Kitty Cohen's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys been into Kitty Cohen's yet?
Too many times. For them being open, like 4 weeks? We've been there far too many times.
They may or may not hold my swimsuit behind the bar.
You know, it gets crusty when it dries.
That
fits the aesthetic so perfectly.
Exactly.
I was in there the other night and I was like, man. This is where a lot of people got STDs.
Yeah, perfect 70s coked in.
It is. It's like, man, I bet Farrah Fawcett in some kind of essence is in the walls. Because I know Jeremy loves those posters. There was one of Michelle Pfeiffer today from Scarface drinking scotch. It's like, it nails it. It's good. You guys have drinks, sir? Lots of drinks.
Drinks there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about the drinks? I think they're really good.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
They're super quality stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not like crazy or out there, you know, but they're solid bartenders. They've got a great selection, and I mean, honestly, it's the atmosphere that you go there
That's
for.
Totally,
you
know? Right.
Like, absolutely. It's bringing a new clientele to the street, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we hope to kind of get a little bit of that, you know, down the road. But it was crazy because during their grand opening, they had a line like down the block. And I was like, holy
shit. Dude, I have never seen a line to get into a bar.
Into a bar. Yeah. No. Well, I mean, Black Card proved that people want to fucking hang out and drink. And they had a great concept there.
Yeah.
Proven Cooper. Like, it's really, really looking up for all those guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were talking about it downstairs. But Patrick, I've known you. Hopefully it's not regrettable. On
no,
either,
no, by any means.
But since like the early let's say 2004, is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Black House.
Line and Verse days.
That's, oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So if anybody wants to ask Patrick in the future how dumb I was, that's the guy to ask. Because you know me before this whole fucking turmoil of the booze industry.
Oh, absolutely. Exactly.
Which is really, really good. And the main thing, because, you know, obviously your PR company sends over the bios. I'm like, oh, yeah, bios, that's good. The one thing I remembered immediately about Patrick, besides having a brother, is that Boyd, Texas.
Oh, God. Bringing that up.
Can you just... Boyd sounds diminutive, and I don't want to cast any kind of perspective on Boyd. How's Boyd? Is it a good spot?
So I haven't been there in 3 years.
That's not that long, though. 3 years is pretty
yeah,
good.
Yeah, my family's moved out of there, thank God.
Oh, good, good. Okay.
So I have no reason to go back there.
Right.
They did get a second stoplight.
Good.
So we doubled in the stoplights, and we do have a Subway and a Sonic now.
Oh, that's
so
amazing.
So we're moving up in the world.
Is it the same guy that runs both?
It's probably so.
Yeah. Still no Dairy Queen, though.
Still no Dairy Queen.
Well, yeah. You're not metropolitan enough.
Just, yeah. Nope. No,
but so
sir.
When did you leave Boyd?
3 days after I graduated high school.
It's like, I
it was
can.
Like, done. All right, going to Austin. See you guys later.
Is there anything, and this is not to poke fun at Boyd, of which I've never been, so of course I'm ignorant to the whole thing, but what, as you're growing up and doing in Boyd, what the hell does one do socially?
Oh, goodness.
It's not cow tipping. Again, this is just stereotypes.
No. That probably never did that myself, okay, but okay. I know people who did that.
All right, good.
Yeah. It's
just
accurate.
Making sure I'm not like out of line here.
Drinking in fields.
Good.
And
sure.
That's about it.
Natty Light.
Oh God. At that point. Well, a lot of Boone's Farm actually.
That's because
like,
it's easy.
Yeah.
It's cheap. Right?
Exactly.
It's
tastes like sugar.
Some yeah. Schnapps.
Oh, sugar is good. Sugar's tasty. It's real good. But so you ended up going to UT?
No. Well, I did, and then I dropped out.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it not working out?
It was so expensive and I was paying for it myself and I was like, man, fuck this. I know what I'm one of those weirdos where I knew at that prior to that moment that I wanted to own a coffee shop. My first job in Austin, I was working at Teo, the gelato place.
Yeah,
and I was making,
because you were talking about it and it just, and I went in there one day and I think you were working. I'm like, this is delicious.
Yeah.
That's so way ahead of its time, if you think about
it.
Oh,
yeah.
Gelato is a thing now. There's gelaterias or gelaterias or whatever.
Yeah.
But not then.
No, and they use Cuvée, and that was the only account.
Really?
Well, in they Austin. They
well,
did
I didn't
back
know that.
In the day. Yeah, and Cuvée was out in Spring, Texas.
Okay.
And I was fortunate enough to kind of come up under that Cuvée's wing back in 2004.
I didn't even realize
that. Yeah.
And so was Medici another kind of like a massive chapter for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Because one was it? The one in Clarksville?
It was the one in Clarksville. It was a month after they opened.
When did they open? What year were we talking?
September 2006. Okay. They're about to have a 10-year anniversary.
Really?
Yeah, on the 4th of September.
That's crazy. But even before kind of getting involved with the gelato piece and then you've got Cuvée, coffee, what was it about coffee that kind of resonated with you?
Honestly, so that's coming it. From Boyd and not really, gotta preface it that way. It was the first.
I liked electricity. Electricity
exactly.
was great.
It was fucking great. No, it was the first industry or commodity or consumable, I should say, that you could see this transparent like link back to the chain all the way back to origin.
Yeah.
And I liked the fact that me doing my job really well benefited all these people. And it was like literally me selling this awesome coffee and repping it well actually benefits somebody. And I can see that, you know, not directly. Like, I mean, now we hopefully will have the opportunity to meet some of these people that were actually serving their coffee. And I mean, Lorenzo's actually dealt with them a lot. He's gone to Origin. But that was the first kind of experience in my life where I was like, I feel pretty good about doing this. Or it's like, I like the community aspect of it
yeah.
for sure. But as far as the actual product that I'm making, nobody's being really taken advantage of in specialty coffee.
Well, yeah, and the thing too, and to go psychologist here for a second, I mean, like if you think about it, so small town Texas, obviously you're aiming for bigger things. I'm not actually sure why you ended up in Austin. Obviously, we're all thankful for it. But connecting to these other more worldly cultures in a sense, like Mezcal does that for me in a little bit right now, given it's just around the corner in Mexico. But like having just a connection to these different cultures too, was that a piece that's also like enlarging your mind and all of that?
No, absolutely. I mean, it forced me to kind of think outside of Boyd in Texas. Yeah. And I mean, because very little travel when I was, you know, young. I mean, especially growing up in Boyd, rarely left Texas. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I got to do a little more research and understand like what sort of conditions these people grow up in and like what sort of environments they're, you know, immersed in.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating to me to see how much work went into producing, you know, just a pound of coffee. And it's like a shit ton of work.
Well, absolutely. Like that aspect of process or that aspect of understanding where things are kind of coming from, like the earth really, right? Like were your folks in the food industry? Were they farming? Like what kinds of, or just, are you the first to kind of say, this is actually something that's really interesting? Because most people, to put it that way, like most people in hospitality, there's some thread. Like dad was a barback, mom was a waitress, right? So do you follow that or is it totally unique?
Yeah, really didn't have that too much. I mean, nobody in my family drinks coffee. I mean,
really?
Growing up.
Do they still talk to you?
Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah. But I mean, my parents did own a restaurant like when I was younger for about a year. And so I got a little taste of that and like the kitchen life. And but for me, I mean, I love, like, it's as weird as it sounds, I love the service industry.
Yeah.
Like, I love customer service.
Do you like, is it the people aspect?
It's the people, like chatting with people. And it's funny because, I mean, that's like, I stepped away from that for a bit and I was doing more management. And I was like, fuck, man, you lose touch with like why you're doing it. And ultimately it comes down to people.
It's an amazing, that is the most poignant thing that anybody can say about the industry, because lots of people, when you talk about the cocktail end of it, which really runs parallel to coffee. Coffee is, again, as we're talking, you guys are drinking, Lorenzo's drinking the Elmer T. Lee, the special commemorative edition, which, fine choice, sir.
Thank you.
And then we picked the 2001 Knob Creek for you, Patrick. He's got the real dense beard, so I figured he needed the darker, more leathery, you know, kind of bourbon. But like, that's the thing, is that sometimes with coffee and with the cocktail culture, people are so eager just to make it, right? Mm-hmm. They forget what it's about, and it's about connecting with people, and you're delivering them these things that they need.
Well, and it's such a unique industry because there was so few of us then
cared. Nobody, right?
Yeah, so we sought each other out and then we stuck together.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I actually met the owner of Medici, Michael Vaclav, in February 2005.
Really?
And he was the GM of JP's Java, which was just north of campus.
Yeah.
And so I drove out to College Station and there was the first ever barista jam. Is what they called it.
Wow.
And so it was just a bunch of baristas getting together and just nerding out. And so a lot of heavy hitters were there at that time. Like now, fast forward, you know, what, 11 years, and a lot of those guys have gone on to do amazing things. I mean, Dan Streetman, it was at his coffee shop, and now he's, what, the VP of Irving Farms or something?
Yeah.
And obviously, Michael went on to now have 5 Medici's and opening a roastery in a 6th location.
That's amazing.
So it's crazy. Mike McKim with Cuvée just blowing up, doing the nitro coffee.
It's a good time to be in this kind of creative and kind of, God forbid, but crafty piece of the industry or piece of the market in general. You know,
it's funny. I hear people say that a lot. And I often, like, I sit back and I have to think, was it ever a bad time to be?
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, like, it's always been a good time to be creating something with love and with your hands and with passion,
sure.
You know? And, I mean, it's better now, perhaps because it's bigger and allows for more room and more people and, at the end of the day, a little bit more money for everybody.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. I think about those bartenders, like, coming out of the dark ages, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, that's right.
And like, I mean, that was a really cool, really good time to be doing what they were doing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, talk about Kitty Cohen, man. What that represents in terms of the cocktail lineage and, like, the chronology of what the fuck people were drinking at that point.
Yeah.
Not so good, right? But to be alive during that point and kind of look at basically like fast food cocktails, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Syrups are mass produced, which I think has been probably a shift too. And that's why this coffee as a craft, if you will, like that's why I think people really it resonates with them. It's like, I just need coffee and milk. I don't need syrups. I don't need additives. I don't need coloring and all of that. So we know that Patrick is from the Podunk town of Floyd.
Yeah.
But Lorenzo, like, are you a Texas guy as well? So the good thing about you, or rather,
one
your
of
name,
the good things,
one of the most amazing things. I mean, he's incredibly attractive, ladies and gentlemen. But are you a Texas guy? Like, your reputation preceded you. They told me like he's a big deal. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, another big deal.
He's a big deal. He's a big deal.
Don't tell me that. I don't need to know.
You're sold as a big deal. You're booked as a big deal.
I grew up in an oil family.
Oh, really?
So we moved around like a lot.
Yeah.
And ended up in graduating high school in Houston.
Where about?
I'm from Houston. The Woodlands.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
So how old are you roughly?
33.
Yeah, I think we probably know a lot of the same folks from the Woodlands, man. Katie, representing. I know, we both laugh. We're like, oh, fuck, really? Hey, they got a cocktail bar now. Fuck y'all. No,
and a pretty sweet mall.
Yes.
That's it.
That's right. It's quite a nice mall. So for you, too, were you, you know, immersed or brought up in the – you're talking about oil, but were you ever in the hospitality industry? Young?
No, actually. I don't know how I got into this because I have literally no connection to the hospitality
industry.
No, it's no. My mom was a nurse and a school teacher. My father's a chemist.
That makes some sense, though.
And I mean that it's really funny because just listening to you talk to Patrick, you know, about that and about how. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm not about the people and that I'm not about customer service because obviously I understand that's a big part of it. But for me, it's so much more about the reasoning and the systems and the theory.
Your process
behind,
guy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and that's. I mean, that kind of fits.
And that's my role. You need that, right? You need the analytical guy and you need the more creative and kind of maybe more sociable guy. Mm-hmm. Not to say that, I mean, you seem incredibly charming, but
I'm a little antisocial.
Oh, that's where the reputation comes from.
There it is.
So like when you're graduating out of the Woodlands at that point, are you thinking, oh no, I'm going to do oil. Pop can get me a job. Or are you saying, fuck that, I'm revolting against all
No,
of
I was going to be a writer.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you mind prose, poetry?
Critic. I was going to be
Really?
Yeah. So I went to the University of Houston and then later Texas State.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Wait, when were you at Texas State?
Till 2006.
So we went there at the same time.
Wow.
That's right. We got in a fight. Remember that?
You stole my hack, he said. Son of a bitch.
Like, stop kicking shit. Just go to class already.
I was one of those assholes hanging outside of Flowers Hall, you know, just like kicking the sack around.
Yeah.
So I, you know, the goal was to write for, you know, Paste and Stone and
so music
that kind of
guy.
Stuff. Yeah.
Just because I love music and I know Patrick and I grew up, you know, when we talk about how we've known each other, mostly because of music.
Mm-hmm.
What do you listen to these days?
Man, right now, I'm listening to like a lot of Jason Isbell, Margo Price.
Okay.
Swamp Dog. I mean, let's get
Damn.
Real.
I play so much fucking Swamp Dog. Swamp Dog.
So you're going to have to tell. I'm actually not familiar.
So Swamp Dog is, I guess we'll call him like R&B.
Really?
And
that doesn't do it justice.
That really does not match.
It's hard to. Yeah. It's hard to. So originally he had a couple of hits as a small child, like around the age of like 11 and 12.
Okay.
And he was performing under his Christian name. And then in like 1961, 1962, he did a bunch of acid.
Okay.
And that's when the persona of Swamp Dog was revealed to him.
Connected.
Yeah.
Like
Swamp Dog with two G's.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, D-O-double-G, the original.
If you're talking early 60s, this misspelling.
Yeah. It was huge.
Cultural. Impact there.
So the reason that he chose dog was because a dog never did anything that was out of character or surprised you. If a dog licked you, if a dog bit you, if a dog ran away.
No surprise.
Well, that's just what the dog's supposed to do.
Interesting.
So he went.
Patrick's laughing.
He went down to Muscle Shoals and started recording there.
Okay.
Where's Muscle Shoals? Alabama. So some a lot of like Southern Soul folks came out of there.
The Stones record there? Is that the like they had?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just had like one session or so exactly. down there, right? Yeah.
And so he was recording out of there. I think he did 3 studio albums.
Wow.
Out of there, Cuffed, Collared, and Tagged. It's some really great stuff, man.
Yeah,
really is. He does this cover of John Prine's Sam Stone.
Okay,
it's like beautiful.
Really?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but he's been around. He's still.
Is he still?
Oh, he's still making. He just put out an album in 2012.
Is he touring?
Called The White Man Made Me Do It.
Really?
Yeah.
The white man made him do it. Fuck, we're always doing that. Well, that's what I understand.
You just gotta. At least I am. You just gotta check it out.
Is it good?
It's brilliant. Yeah.
So what? So soulful, but organic instruments. Hopefully.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he has one album, called Party Tonight.
Okay.
That's way disco.
Oh really? But that's not bad either.
It's fucking awesome. Is it that's actually probably my 70s? Favorite.
Oh yeah.
Oh right.
Yeah. I mean, he was in it.
Wow.
It's just fun stuff.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's great. I think, for God's sakes, I've been like. It goes all different directions, and that's a great thing about now, right? Whether we talk about music versus when we were in college, when you kind of have to discover it a little bit more deeply, like
right?
You got to chronicle it. You almost have to go to a library to find stuff like that.
Yeah.
Now Spotify's got everything.
Well, almost everything.
But close enough to get started and be obsessive.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's like you can go as deep as you want. But so when did that kind of that pursuit to do critic like music? Writing and stuff. When did that? Did you actually get some momentum in that field?
No, because the idea was that I was going to go to grad school at UT.
Oh, okay.
And enroll in the ethnomusicology program.
Oh wow.
And that's actually when coffee derailed me.
Derailed you?
Yeah.
It's a good habit in this case.
No, I think.
Was it a bad?
I think it worked out. You know.
We'll see.
You're still young. Yeah. I mean, what was that exposure like? Can you kind of recall that moment or one of the moments where like this really makes a lot of sense to me?
Yeah. So I was working at a Starbucks down south while I was going to school, and there was a magazine. I don't even know if it exists anymore, but in it they had this thing about the World Barista Championship, and I was like, this is fucking weird. So of course I went online and like you know clickety clack
Netscape.
It was probably Netscape and found out all this information. You know, was reading about the rules and whatnot. And then this one customer came into the shop super late, like we were closing up.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Can I get a double short cappuccino?" And that's the closest thing that you can get at Starbucks to what we call a traditional cappuccino, which is what you get at all the good shops, right? And I was like, "You don't usually come here, do you?" And he's like, "No." I was like, "Where do you go drink coffee?" You know, because I wanted to figure this out. And he goes, "I've never heard somebody say something bad about Cafe Medici."
Okay.
And I was like, "Cool, where's that?" And he goes, "That's in Clarksville." I go, "Cool, where's that?"
How long have you been in Austin at that point?
Because
were you living in San Marcos?
I was down in South Austin.
Okay.
And then in the commuting down to San Marcos, so I had no reason to go above the river ever. So I didn't know where that was, but I did. I sought it out and went and had what I would consider to be a pretty transformative espresso experience.
Really?
Yeah, at the original Cafe
Medici.
Tasted
different, looked different?
Everything about it was different. It stunned me.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And so please tell me Patrick was working there when he poured.
No.
Damn it!
It wasn't.
How does this romance begin?
Patrick was working at Medici at the time, but it was not Patrick that made me that espresso.
Oh, I see.
I thought that was your question.
No, but either way, it's just you're so. It's like so.
That would have been a perfect story. Yeah.
All right. I looked into his eyes.
Let's do this again.
Was it? Okay.
No. So what happened was like literally, I was there every day for the next 6 months. Bugging the shit out of Patrick and all of the other baristas.
Were you ordering different stuff just to like get all the flavors?
No, I was just ordering espresso. And then I was asking questions.
What kind of questions do you have at that point?
So I was watching this barista and he was doing this. And I see that you're doing this differently. Why are you doing this differently? Well, when I taste this from this person, it tastes like this. And then But over here, it's like this. And then why do you steam the milk this way? And then, okay, so what's this part of the machine? And this is what our coffee puck looks like. And why does yours look like this? And I mean, just...
Are they going to kick your ass out of there eventually?
Oh, they were, I'm sure, annoyed as shit with me.
A little bit.
Yeah, more than a little bit. Well, that's also at the time. I was a little punk kid.
But you know? Again,
I had some like blonde mohawk and all.
Oh no, shit!
Ears were just covered in.
Listen to Goldfinger all the time. No, I'm kidding.
But at this time in the industry, like somebody like that was definitely piqued our curiosity.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people, you know, ordered
especially
espresso.
In that neighborhood, man. I lived there for a couple years. You know.
Yeah.
People just get what they get, but they don't. Question it, and you guys were only probably open a few years at that point.
Not even.
Yeah, it was about a year.
Just over a year. When I found them. Yeah.
And so did you guys start talking then and kind of?
Well, what we had a Medici had a barista jam again. This is in. Yeah.
You say that and you almost laugh every time.
Oh no, because
it doesn't happen anymore, and it's a weird term. Like
barista jam.
But it was in October.
Yeah, like, hey, everybody, just get your, like, you know, French press, and we're all just going to jam.
We're just going to jam it out.
Just jam.
But he came out to, it was October 2007.
Yeah.
And Lorenzo came out, and I remember because it was right before Halloween, and he had a huge beard, and his hair was all crazy, and you were going to be Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That makes sense.
And so we had this, you know, all these different roasters and all these different baristas came to the back of Medici, and we just had this, like, crazy good time. And that's when... That is when I remember Lorenzo putting his foot down as far as, like, I want to work here. And that's when we kind of put the wheels in motion as far as, like, Michael and you know, all the crew being like, we need to hire this guy.
So you were, like, you ready from being student to teacher? That kind of thing? Like, were you just want to get your hands dirty at that point?
Well, no. It was just that I realized that, like, this was something that went way... So I was the first coffee master that worked for Starbucks here in Austin.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. You know, so I rocked the black apron. Like, I was already nerdy about coffee. And then after meeting these guys, that's when I realized that there was a lot of stuff that I wasn't getting at the store level.
Yeah, yeah.
With Starbucks that was happening over here and that I wanted to be involved in and that I wanted to know. Because that's a weird little...
Well, it's not
psychological
corporate.
Tick that I have is like where I just need to know. I just need to know this information.
How long do you spend on Spotify then when you go and you find an artist? You go like, oh, related artist. I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah.
Another related artist. You go down the wormhole, don't you?
Well, that's what one of my favorite things to do, though, is just to put it on artist radio.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like that.
You know? And then I hear a song and I was like, oh, man, that song's genius. And then I save it.
Yeah.
You know, and then I have it to go back for... later.
So you are a details guy. Absolutely. Like, okay, so I got one level of minutia. I'm going to a next one. And then ultimately, to Patrick's point, all of that process, that the flow takes you all the way back to the ground.
Exactly.
And so how long did it take you, would you say, to understand the process all the way back to production, which is the most raw piece of it, the most pristine part where it comes from the ground, gets roasted, and then...
Well, that's the crazy thing about coffee is it's so deep that we're still
learning.
We're still learning about it. I mean, and this is almost a decade later. I mean, we're still learning what we're doing.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, there's just, you know, it's really funny because people have this idea of what coffee is, and it's always elevated to the same level as wine or spirits or food or. We lack the historical context of any of those.
You're totally right.
We've been making modern espresso since 1946.
Wow.
That's
just right at the end of World War II.
Yeah.
Is it something carried over, that concept? I mean, is it an Italian thing?
Yeah.
It is, right?
Yeah, it was Italian, yeah. Cremonisi was the guy who invented the modern espresso machine.
How long ago?
1946.
Oh, so that is the actual
That's
mechanism.
That's it, right there, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's it.
Well, technically, I mean, you could say 1938, but... And we won't.
No, I know, but I like it that there is a history to it.
That's it.
Then that means there is no end. It's boundless.
Yeah.
Because then it's a guy, you know, 50, 60 years ago that did a thing, and then that is such a large time period to learn about. There are dark ages, right? There's dark ages of cocktails, which you talked about, tequila. But now it's like this nice cultural awakening for coffee.
Right. And I mean, that's the crazy thing. You know, I mean, you bring up cocktails again. I mean... Cocktails, I mean, arguably like, what, 1880?
Sure. And So you're absolutely right. Yeah, there's all the pre-prohibition stuff. Not a lot of people writing about it, but apparently there are Civil War cocktails and shit.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting, just the history of it. But do you feel like your access to the knowledge and to the information now is better than it could have ever been before?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of organizations that are dedicated to researching and codifying and publishing a lot of the information that previous companies would try to keep secret. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, if you're Nestle and you're doing all of this research into coffee farming and processing, why are you going to share that with Procter & Gamble?
Right. Yeah. Because because at that point you thought that that's what made you successful.
Sure.
Right? Like, oh, well, I can't tell you where Michter's is made. They won't tell me. I asked them multiple times. Like, we're not telling you. I'm like, there's not that many distillers, like six distillers. It comes from one of them. Just stop being a dick about it.
Yeah.
Right? Just be open. And so I think we're in this new era where you get all of the info and it's not so secretive anymore.
And it's interesting though, because I don't know, I feel like I've been burned a couple of times by being a little too open.
Really?
Yeah.
What, in which sense? Like competition?
Just in things that I've written or published or conversations that I have with people.
Thrillist articles.
You mean real journalism? you see the air quotes there?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
We're definitely in the age of openness, but I feel like industry-wide kind of seen a big turn in it in the last 5 years.
Really?
Yeah. It's really fascinating because for a long time, we were sitting there like as baristas, just like going to these jams and whatnot and like talking to me like, oh, let's all learn together. This is amazing. But in the last 5 years, it's become a lot more condensed as to who's talking, and it's become a lot more condensed as to what they're talking about.
Almost homogenized.
Yeah.
Because you're right. That happens with many industries. It's just like they need their little figurehead. You know, and then Thrillist, which is again really respectable journalism that people can turn to in times of need because of its sociological importance. Anyway, so but I mean, you're right. Like that's kind of what's happening. Does that feel like the good work you guys are doing together at Fleet that somehow that's kind of rubbed down or marginalized? Seems like you guys have pretty good reps in the public, for example.
I wouldn't say that it's reflecting like badly on us. I think it's confusing to the consumer, and that's one of my biggest concerns right now is just flooding the market with, you know, errant information and marketing that's being like, you know, proctored as science.
I love it because we're in different industries, but it's the same shit. Absolutely, yeah, please. So I imagine there is this magical moment of which you guys realize you are partners in crime and you want to start this thing together. How long does it take before you have this idea that, yeah, we need to do our own thing? We need to start our own spot.
I mean, we always kind of joked about it for years. I mean, when we worked together at Medici, I mean, it was
like we were working together for like 2 weeks. Yeah. And we were like, oh, yeah. We should totally open up a shop. We'd be awesome. Ha, 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 ha.
When did it become a serious thing instead of like a hearty heart kind of thing? Because moment.
It was like
October of 2014.
Yeah, I mean, that's when it got really serious. Yeah. That's when it got, yeah. No turning back at that point.
Money involved at that point.
Signing blood.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, we were talking about, I guess, in the summer of 2014. And then, you know, I had my eye out on the certain spot. Mm-hmm. Which is where we're at now, because I used to live right there behind ACC, and we were at a latte art competition. We call them the TNTs, Thursday Night Throwdown here, host them every month, and we were all like hammered afterwards. And one of our buddies mentioned that he saw a turnkey coffee shop for sale on Craigslist, and I pulled it up on my phone. I was like, it's got to be that fucking place. I pulled it up on my phone, and it was. Wow. And so we went to Kirby Lane that night and sat there for a couple of hours just hashing out, like, should we do it? Like what are we getting into? And
yeah, so, is this neighborhood feasible? Is this space feasible? Is this price? Does it make sense? Where can we put things? Like,
had you been drinking coffee? Because that makes more details rattle off.
No.
No.
Definitely not. Yeah, but what about this? What about this?
We were drinking a lot of beer, and I ate the Paris, Texas.
Oh, a lot of queso.
That was so good.
I love the Paris, Texas. Oh, you know? Yeah. I mean, I don't love Kirby Lane, but I love the Paris, Texas.
I would say that I love Kirby Lane. Just think
I have
about
a fondness
it.
For
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's
good.
Like a high school girlfriend.
That's right, yeah. Can't stand long-term things, and like I can spend about 30 minutes, and we're good.
Mm-hmm.
Then I need to walk away. That's actually exactly. precisely what it is. But it's always good for those 30 minutes. Always good for those 30 minutes. So 2014, these things are kind of cemented. There's money. There's a turnkey coffee shop. So from having this notion, which you guys have been talking about for years, to actually saying, all right, lease is signed, how long did it take?
Ooh, I mean, it took us probably, about two and a half months to actually get enough money together and execute the agreement. Purchase, yeah. Yeah. So we took over the lease from the previous tenant, and that was January 25th, 2015.
Wow.
And from there...
Not that we're keeping track
yeah,
of
yeah.
counting or
anything. Yeah. But yeah, from there, it was like, okay, well, let's, you know, let our like current bosses know, because we wanted to make sure it was actually going to happen before we... kind of screw ourselves out
sure,
of a job.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we started demo like the next week and really had no fucking clue what we were getting into and quickly learned that, yeah, we had a lot of work ahead of us. And so I mean, and it took us, 14 months to turn it around.
And stuff.
We ran into a lot of issues.
It's a 364 square foot space. It took us
far too long
for that space.
Yeah. We got to think about efficiency, right? Efficiency of movement, like how do you line stuff up? Did like going into this spot and having this spot that is yours, what was the thing that you really wanted to imbue on the spot? Like whether it's like a quality about your personality, whether it's a quality of production, what was the thing? It's like, no matter what we do, it's got to have.
I think we're just trying to be intentional. Yeah. Like every time you look in the space, we laid everything out intentionally. Like whether it's the menu, the drink offering, I mean the seats, the size of the tables.
Yeah.
I mean all those things. Like it was we learned through all of our experience at Medici and at Cuvée and just going to other coffee shops really what not to do, but then what right. align with our personalities. And honestly, I mean, that's why we chose a small space, because what we're doing is different from most coffee shops, and it has to be a one-on-one interaction to kind of walk people through our approach to things.
Yeah. I think the reason that question becomes difficult to answer is because, I mean, we've been doing coffee for 25 years.
It's incredible.
You know, and over that time, you get all sorts of ideas in your brain.
Right.
And so I think the easiest way to answer the question is to say, at the end of the day, we just had to get this shit out of our heads and into
committed to
real
paper,
life
to something, right? Yeah.
To like make us not feel like crazy people.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of our really weird ideas like into this space, but
so when you think of coffee, does it so spirits get really esoteric? Beers can get really esoteric, very sour style, for example.
Sure.
Have stuff that's Brettanomyces or whatever. With coffee, how weird does it really, or how weird can it really get?
I don't think we know. I mean,
that's actually really scary.
Yeah, because people just haven't pushed out. Like, and that's what
people
we're
afraid to.
Yeah, because you have the 8 drinks that everyone makes.
Right.
And people are starting to make these, use coffee more as an ingredient and make these sort of coffee cocktails. But I mean, that all stemmed from the barista competitions.
Yeah.
And these signature beverages. And I mean, when we started, I mean, I won the original competition with a rosemary chocolate macchiato, which it's boring as now.
I mean, it's
delicious.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
But also like.
Oh, rosemary?
Yeah,
right.
Very basic. And so now they're doing just crazy shit.
Are you guys more concerned with the business? Because this is one of the things that's really, one of the really sobering moments about any business is you can serve yourself, not literally, but you can creatively.
Yeah.
You can serve yourself, right, and say, well, I'm going to do this thing that's incredibly challenging, ahead of the curve, or I can just make something that I know is going to resonate with everybody. what do you guys weigh on one of those sides more than the other? Is it a combination of both?
I would say that hopefully whatever we do that we find creatively fulfilling and challenging is at the same time like resonant with a segment of the populace, you know?
It's hard, right? It's a very delicate balance.
It is. Absolutely. But that's the line that we're trying to ride, both in how we're presenting the roasters that we're working with and our retail coffee selection, how we're moving through the coffees that we offer on the bar, the way that we craft and create the coffee and menu. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know, is to find like that segment of the population, those people that are interested in like a real exploration of the entirety of the supply chain.
Yeah.
And at the same time interested in these esoteric flavor experiences, just to say like, let's fucking have fun with this stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. Like
that, and that was a big part of, I mean, all the conversations around it was a lot of the industry is going really serious,
right?
And like so serious. And
snooty serious? I always use that word. It's like,
I don't know. I wouldn't use the word snooty.
Okay.
I would just say like, so I think what it is people, baristas specifically, has always been this term of like, oh, well, you're like, oh, I used to be a barista too, is what you hear. And you're like, oh, okay, I guess that doesn't like mean anything. But then there's this group of people, you know, I guess it's like you have bartenders, right? And you have mixologists.
You got it, yeah.
You know, so it's like we don't have that same word.
Yeah.
And so like, how do you convey that you're a serious barista?
Right, that it is a viable and lucrative career, because it is.
Lucrative.
It can be.
Yeah,
no. Small business owner, owning small businesses, maybe inherently isn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were saying that it's just an interesting spot right now, you know. But you guys really sought to do something that kind of balanced the esoteric, but still be accessible, yeah.
Well, and I think just have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, and that has to be, that's a core part of our model, is not taking ourselves too serious. I mean, like we talked about early on, like, okay, we got to do like milkshakes or stuff like something like that, because it's just like
crowd pleaser.
And like a lot of coffee shops would be like, oh, those, who the fuck are these guys? Like, what are they doing? But it's like, but no, like doing them well. We're not going to buy, you know, dryers and, you know, just whip it up with some milk and some fucking malt and that's it and call it a day. But really, you know,
thoughtful,
really, yeah, very thoughtful, source and quality ingredients, and make something that is accessible and craft, like you were saying, and just approachable.
Well, I think what goes to that snooty thing too is like, I mean, we take what we do very seriously. Like Patrick was saying, when you execute coffee well and you sell more of that and you expose people to it, you see that like ripple down the entirety of the supply chain,
totally,
all the way back to origin. And that is serious, man. I mean, that's
people's lives.
That's heavy shit right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like 25% of the population of Guatemala relies solely on coffee for their income. You know, I mean, so there's significant impact, and this is a serious industry.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you don't have to take yourself seriously.
Well, yeah,
you know, like,
I think that's the biggest flaw that anybody can have, is that I always have this quote, that it's like, if you take yourself too seriously, we're going to laugh at you, right? But if you can take yourself lightly and laugh at yourself, who's going to laugh at you? You're already laughing at it. You know what I mean? Like, you just have to, being so stuffy with art is done.
Yeah.
It's been done, you know? And coffee's got this air of arrogance. So just as the term mixology, which we kind of all laugh in. Like,
right.
Oh,
absolutely.
In the industry, you know? But it is about having fun. It is about sharing something that's enjoyable. Why would you guys put stuff that's really hard to understand on the menu? Like all of it, right? Like all last words. Not everybody's going to like that cocktail. Not everybody wants a rack. Not everybody wants mezcal. Mm-hmm. You got to have a French 75 now and again. It's not a big fucking deal. It's all right, you know? So looking at the menu at Fleet, what is something that you could consider a crowd pleaser that you know, like, I think people are going to really, really.
Definitely good. The morning ritual series.
Yeah? Tell me more about that.
Okay, so for the first three-ish months we were open, we had a drink called the morning ritual, which was a donut-infused cortado. We infused milk with donuts from Mrs. Johnson's.
Oh, my God.
And made it with a cortado and then a donut hole on the side.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And that was, to us, the perfect segue for somebody drinking like caramel macchiatos at Starbucks into specialty coffee, where they can tell their friends, like, I drink a cortado. I mean, unbeknownst to their friend, it was made with donut milk and it was super fucking sweet. Yeah. But still, it was, again, fun, approachable, but still, it's not 20 ounces.
Yeah.
Right, right.
It's not, you know, crazy.
It's intentional. It's focused. They watch the involvement and the process and all of it. It's served with latte art. It's, you know, I mean, the first drink on Bobby's cocktail list forever, right? Was the Bramble.
Lovely drink.
Yeah, it's a great drink, you know, but it's not for like your serious cocktail drinker.
Yeah.
It's for somebody that's looking for something like an apple teeny or whatever. Right. But you can make it, you can craft it. They're watching you measure, they're watching you shake, seeing the layers.
This is very precise.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, there's some shit to this. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what the morning ritual is for us.
But that's perfect because it means you guys are pretty shrewd creatively. Because you don't have to do something like that. You could just be like, well, I'm just going to serve the Brave back to Anvil's, man. I'm just going to serve the Brave all day. Yeah. Right? It's going to be mezcal, tequila, simple. But that's so hard. You can't do that. So, like, kind of just paying homage to something that's a little bit lighter, a little bit more fun, hearkening back to the things that are familiar that people like about mainstream coffee. That's shrewd. And that's how you advance and evolve a business.
Well, and now it has evolved into the Saturday morning ritual, which is
cereal?
Fruity Pebble.
Yes.
Fruity Pebble infused milk.
Thanks, Milk Bar.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Exactly. That is fucking perfect.
Yeah. Got so it. It's just going to be a
crunch on the menu.
Yeah, we'll see.
That one's got good milk.
Oh, hell yeah.
Really a lot of people like that Cinnamon Toast Crunch milk. You're like,
it's not bad.
No, it's.
Oh, and peanut butter crunch milk.
That's a personal favorite for me.
Yeah. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
Nuts.
Yeah.
I really like peanuts and like. With bourbon and I mean, it doesn't end.
Well, we'll be releasing the new menu in mid-October.
Okay.
So we'll have the new morning ritual.
Amazing.
Come out then. It'll be
pretty awesome.
It'll be pretty awesome.
For those of us that are maybe a little more adventurous into perhaps more esoteric flavors, is there something for us as well on the menu? More challenging?
I think what's interesting is... Well, I'd go two directions with that.
Okay.
Right? I'd say number one, also on the coffee end menu, is a drink that we call the Sandia.
Sandia,
right now.
Okay.
Yeah, which is iced coffee, and then it's Juicelands Recovery Punch.
What green?
Just watermelon, pineapple juice, coconut water, beet juice, lime, and a Himalayan sea salt.
Oh, wow.
A little bit of simple syrup, hopped grapefruit bitters, and mint.
Oh, that's amazing.
And... people, I mean, all the time look at that and go like, what the
that's a cocktail,
fuck is
man.
Wrong with you guys?
Yeah.
And all I have to say is, no, you really need to drink it. You really need to drink it because it's going to blow your mind.
Does it blow their mind?
Every time.
So that's one of two. What's the other one? This is so intriguing to me.
So the perennial on that menu is what we call the ET.
Okay.
And that's our take on the espresso tonic.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'm already real intrigued.
Yeah. So it's tonic water, espresso, lime, simple syrup.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
That is insane. What
it is
you guys
so
doing
good.
Tonic yourself?
No, Fever Tree.
Fever Tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love the Indian
tonic
water.
I will say,
water.
Man, okay, I love those folks. You know the Austin Shaker?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Rad.
Love
rad
it. Crispin. Yeah.
So I went in there to learn a little bit more about tiki and tiki world. I told him, I was like, yeah, you know, this is what we're doing. And he goes... I've known this dude literally fucking 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And he goes, I was like, yeah, we're using Fever Tree tonic water. And he goes, you need to up your tonic game.
Oh, come on.
I was like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, already giving a shit. We're putting espresso in tonic water. We're pairing it with, like, Juicelands juice.
Yeah, who's doing that?
Come on. Up my tonic game. Anyway.
No, but it's, man, you see, this is the thing. Is coffee is just right. Now, not to compare the two in the sense that they're very different. But they're right on the heels of cocktail.
Yeah.
So, you know, the aviary, you know, has pushed cocktail construction to this whole other level where coffee is just starting to be able to do that. You talk about tonic and coffee. I mean, that's insane. Lime juice and simple syrup. You're basically making a gin and tonic and subbing the gin with.
No, and that's exactly what we say. That is exactly what we said to people. And what we're doing. The previous iteration of the menu, we had the Claro, which was a play on a beer shandy.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So that was iced coffee, lemon juice, simple syrup, and bitters. It was tiki bitters.
You guys are going to open a cocktail bar eventually. This just feels like it feels like you already have the background.
The reality is like it's a really different environment to serve people alcoholic sure. beverages.
No,
you know,
right. You're right.
And there's something about like serving people. I mean, you know, the awesome thing about working at a coffee shop at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Mm hmm.
Is number one, you get to see the sunrise.
That's beautiful.
And that's badass.
Beautiful. Sure.
But number two, you greet people before they're ready to meet the world.
Yeah.
You see them at their worst.
You do. You know? And like, and not at their worst, that's like any of their own fault. But
right.
like, you see them at their worst because of what the world's done to them. And you're there like.
You're like a tumbleweed getting tarnished.
And, you're there to like. Be those gentle hands that like pushes the little bird out of the nest and says, right. "Go fly."
Soft little cloud you that know? Just guides yeah. them to safety. So God, how poetic!
Then yes, and so shaking it up a little bit, and so I said I was going to go two directions earlier with the esoteric qualities. I honestly think that our roaster selection and our espresso menu is second to none.
Yeah.
Because of what we're buying, how we're pairing them up against each other, and then just sort of how we're overall presenting and creating the flavor profiles with the individual coffees that we're trying to.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, those are for your brave drinkers.
Yeah.
You know?
It's an amazing thing because one of the reasons I like talking to people about coffee is that I love coffee and I can taste certain things in it, but bringing it into the brighter, the more acidic, the more sweet kind of elements like lemon juice, like lime juice, like tonic, which is kind of earthy and floral. I haven't done that yet. You know, I haven't really branched out, and that's not because I don't want to, but it takes guys like you to really like set the standard and say like, it's okay. You'll like it. We vetted it. You know,
yeah, you can drink your bourbon with Sprite if you want to.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's fucking just perfect way to segue, but that's exactly right. And I think it's an amazing thing that you're doing. It's very intrepid, it's very bold. Do you feel like you're on to something? Do you feel like you're setting some kind of creative standard for Austin?
Watch I mean,
the ego.
I'm probably
there's been a couple of coffee shops. I mean, shit. I'm jumping back to Medici.
Yeah.
So what was it? 2009? Medici Notte.
Yeah.
So this was something that that Lorenzo was his little brainchild and way ahead of its time, and it failed miserably. Failed so miserably.
It was the worst. But it was the best, but it was the worst.
The best worst.
So yeah. We closed down Medici for an hour and turned it into, you know, white tablecloths. Like we had a wait staff.
Like Jeffrey's across the street.
No, yeah, pretty much. And it was four or five like espresso cocktails, essentially. Wow. I mean, booze free, you know, just like what we're doing with the coffee and menu. But I mean, what? You had the Canadian, which was a maple cappuccino with a candied prosciutto.
A maple macchiato with candied prosciutto.
Oh,
so Shiva, which was like with sesame oil and almond milk and ginger. We made a drink with like a confit. Wow. We did it with...
mole. You had a mole drink.
Oh, that's perfect.
We paired cheeses with the coffees. We made desserts just for the coffees. So for like the last 4 hours, like 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., essentially like it became like this bizarre restaurant cocktail coffee destination.
That's amazing.
That people like were there like on their laptops going like, what the fuck is what going are you doing? On? And it's like, oh yeah. And so it's like there was table service, like there was nothing to go. Like it was weird, but like... It was so much fun, you know, because we would rotate that menu literally every month and new espressos and new drinks and new cheeses and new desserts. And oh, man, it was crazy. It lasted. I think we did it for almost a year.
Yeah.
No kidding.
which blows my fucking mind that we got that long. It just wasn't. People, it was ahead of its time. People did not understand. Well, for one, trying to serve somebody a caffeinated beverage at, you know, 6 p.m. Sure. Yeah, that's really the kicker. So, yeah, we started doing that. I mean, that was definitely like all Lorenzo doing that stuff. But from there, there's been guys that I've definitely picked up that torch. I mean, Houndstooth, they have, you know, regular espresso cocktails.
The mint julep and...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
Espresso julep, right?
Yeah, yeah, espresso julep and... I mean, amongst other drinks that they, the Nine Iron, which is a play on like the Arnold Palmer.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So they've done that stuff, but I think the only difference is we make it like a regular mainstay on the menu, and we have a wider selection.
Right.
And we may push out a little bit more with like the bitters and stuff like that. That's just a little crazy. I mean, that almost scares people, and you're just like, hey, just trust us.
It really does.
They're not ready.
So
man.
Freaked out by it, man.
This concept that you guys have manifested, 340 approximately square feet, is that right?
364.
364, thank you. One day more than, or one day less than.
Mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. I don't remember.
Is this something that's modular? Do you want to do this again? Do you want to have a second location?
I think so. With this concept, it would have to be extremely well thought out. Like it would have to be all about the location, because the space, we failed to mention, it's a triangle. So it literally comes to a point that's about a foot wide. So it is
we call it the vortex.
Yeah, the vortex. And
that's,
I mean,
where the demagog is.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I like it. So yeah, it would have to be a special location that makes sense for us, but we have different concepts. I mean, there's a lot of room in the industry to still bring a new, fresh concept to people that I think would rock their minds a little bit. And that's something that we're kind of keeping in our back pocket for, you know, we'll see. We got to get this one out of the way.
Album number two is on the way.
Yeah.
It just takes time, I guess.
Absolutely.
Well, hopefully we'll hit it like Radiohead's The Bends and not like,
oh man,
whatever
you did the
Supergrass's second album was.
Jesus, don't even get me depressed. Super Drag second album's good though.
Okay,
so there you go. That's fair, right? It's been really brilliant chatting coffee and getting to know you guys, and just feeling like I've got mates that go through the same things. You know, what are people going to like? How do you make something that is very unfriendly and potentially at least gives you sticker shock on the menu, right? Like, how do you make that accessible? How do you bring people in to the movement, which is what it is? So I'm absolutely going to visit you guys. You guys are open on Saturday, yeah?
7 to 7, 7 days a
fucking
week.
Right, okay.
Yep.
I'll be there. I'll see you because I got to try at least two of these things.
Oh, yeah.
And I love caffeine. So it's brilliant. Lorenzo, thanks so much for sharing some bourbon with me and Patrick as well. And we'll talk now after 10 years of radio silence.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, thank you.
Well, there we have it. What do you guys think? Patrick and Lorenzo of Fleet Coffee. Fun guys. Great talking to them and sipping some whiskey. I am not surprised that they were awarded the most innovative coffee creations by the Austin Chronicle in 2016. Patrick touches on a few of these creations, but here are two really notable examples. Last time I was visiting Fleet, Lydia and I got to try two amazing things. All right, so check this out. For one, you have the Saturday Morning Ritual Coffee, which is fruity pebble-infused milk, espresso, and a crispy treat, which may or may not be a Rice Krispie treat. So that's the childlike hearkening back to those Saturday morning cartoon days. And then for the more prestigious and cerebral coffee drinker, they have the Sandia, which has Juice Land's Recovery Punch, a mix of veggie and fruit juices, iced coffee, simple syrup, bitters, and mint. If I wasn't mistaken, I would think that they are running a cocktail bar and switching out the booze for the coffee. At any rate, you have to visit Fleet Coffee in Weberville here in Austin, Texas. It is innovative, it is pushing the boundaries of flavor, and really changing my and others' perception about what kind of grand flavors you can get out of coffee. So thanks everybody for listening to Show to V with Mike G. No matter what kind of turkey or turkey analog you'll be consuming this Thursday for Thanksgiving, or what kinds of trouble you're going to get into at the dinner table talking about Donald Trump, please keep dancing.